We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you by Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
Okay, for those who weren't at session A with Rebecca, I'll reintroduce her. A pleasure to have her here, and we brought her in from her program in New York. She's in the Talmud program in New York, but she has a lot of expertise in Tanakh. She was the Canadian representative in the international, the Chidon HaTanakh, winning for Canada, teaching. She taught at Olpan, actually, for a couple years, Gemara, before she went to New York. She has her master's degree in psychology, in neuropsychology. And she's really a credit to our community, and really I think we need more people, you know, young people excited about Torah who can teach Torah in an exciting way. And it's a pleasure to have her and to spend time with her parents over Shabbos. And I want to thank her parents for all their help and support for me personally and for Torah in Motion over the years. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
Hi, can everyone hear? Yeah. Okay. Hi, I'm Rebecca Winter, and thank you very much for coming to this session, Seeing Double, Repetitive Stories in the Tanakh. And the Tanakh uses a lot of different methods, really, a lot of different literary methods to point out certain things and to teach us different lessons about things that are going on in the Tanakh. And one of a very, very interesting tool that the Tanakh uses is really repetitive stories, using repetition in the Tanakh in order to point things out, in order to make messages clearer to us. And today, we're going to look at four different genres of repetitive stories, so four different types, four different classifications of repetitive stories, and we're going to try to understand and learn, maybe, why the Tanakh uses the repetitive story as a tool in each specific case or in each different genre. So the first genre that we're going to talk about, the first type of repetitive story that we're going to talk about together, is what I've called the same event, new book type. Okay? So this is where we have, this is maybe the type of repetitive story that immediately jumps to mind when we think of repetition in the Tanakh, when we think of repetitive stories. Oh yes, there's some times in the Tanakh where we have one story in one book, and then it's again repeated in another book. For those of you who are in the Divrei HaYamim shir, will immediately think of the Divrei HaYamim repeating the stories in Malachim. That's the same type of genre, the genre of repeating stories across two different books. So the question, yeah.
Just very quickly, there's a big difference between stories repeating themselves and the Chumash, and two different books that were written at different. I mean, the mechanism or the strategy.
Right. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the mechanism and kind of how we're supposed to reconcile those two, or how we're supposed to view that repetition. There's for sure a huge difference in repetition across the Vim, repetition across the Torah, but still the repetition itself has the same genre, right? It's still a repetition across two different books, and we'll talk about how to look at those two. Yeah.
That's what I was asking. Mm-hmm. Is when God repeats a story in the Chumash, mm-hmm.
They're not on the same level at all. But let's look at the example together and see how we approach this kind of repetition, and then we can decide if the question is answered or not. Okay, so let's go ahead. The first story that we come across is the famous story of the story of the spies, Sched HaMeraglim, and it's told first in Sefer Bamidbar. So we're not going to go through the whole story itself, because we're just kind of taking samplings of different repetitive stories, but we're just going to read the first two psukim in Sefer Bamidbar, and we're going to look at how it's told in a very different way, but again repeated in Sefer Dvarim. So let's look at it together, source one, and this is in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Gimel. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, Shlachocha anashim vayaturu et eretz Kna'an asher ani noten livnei Yisrael. Ish echad lematav otav tishlachu kol nasi bahem. So Hashem tells Moshe, send for yourself these spies, Vayaturu at Eretz Kanaan, and they should kind of walk around or tour around Eretz Kanaan. The English translation that we have here is actually spy out Eretz Kanaan. I don't think that that's an accurate translation of the word Vayaturu. It really more means to survey the land, walk around the land, and look at the land. Vayaturu, I think probably this translation from Machon Mamre, to spy, is they use the word to spy because this is the story of the spies, as we know about it in English. But really, in Sefer Bamidbar, uses the word Vayaturu to kind of look at the land, survey the land. Ishechad, ishechad lematavotav, tishlachu, konasi bahem. And we're going to be sending out for this important job of looking at Eretz Yisrael, having a look at the land, we're going to send out the most important people, the Nisi'e Ha'ida, one from every Shevet. This same exact story is again retold by Moshe in his speech in Sefer Dvarim, in his introductory speech to Bnei Yisrael in Sefer Dvarim. So the first parak of Sefer Dvarim starts off, if everybody sees, chapter 1, Deuteronomy. Vatikrivun Eli, Kulchem, Vatamru, Nishlacha Anashim Lefanenu, Vayachperu Lanu et Haaretz, Vayashvu Otanu, Vayashivu Otanu, Davar et Hader Hasherna Aleba, Ve'et Harim Asherna Va'alehem, Vayitav Be'inai Hadavar, Ve'ekach Mikem, Shnei Masar Anashim, Ish Echad Lashevet. So the same exact story, the story of the Ched HaMeraglim, the story of the spies, but this time Moshe is saying, you, Bnei Yisrael, approached me, and you asked me, why don't we send out these spies? This time we have a new word, Vayach Peru et Haaretz, and they should really take a look at the land. They should, as we see here, search the land. They should really, in essence, spy out the land, find things out about the land. And for this job, we need, as it says, anashim. We don't necessarily need the Nisi'e Ha'ida to do this, but anashim, people. Okay, so it's the same account, it's the same exact historical event, two different ways of telling the event, but and it's told across two different books, one in Sefer Bamidbar and one in Sefer Dvarim. And without getting into too many of the details of the stories and why this is and how to reconcile the two or whatever it is, because that's a whole separate shiur. The idea here is, how do we approach this kind of double story? What do we do with this kind of double story? And as we spoke about in the shiur about Divrei HaYamim as well, I think the way to really look at double stories across books is to take a step back, away from the story, and really look at the overall book itself, at the overall Sefer itself, and understand the perspective, or what is the overall message, or what's the drive of each of the Sfarim. Sefer Bamidbar and Sefer Dvarim, each book in the Torah, has a very different overall message. We can really classify each book in a very different way. And so too, for Sefer Bamidbar and Sefer Dvarim, each of those Sfarim is also written from a very different perspective. Each book has its own individual, separate message. And that's how I think we can take a look at the story of the spies. If we look further in Sefer Bamidbar, in the story of the spies, and if you really read the Ched HaMeraglim a little bit more, you would find out that the reason that Hashem wants Bnei Yisrael to go to look at the land of Israel is because linchol et haaretz. He wants them to look at the nachala, and the job of the Nesi'im is to divide the land of Eretz Yisrael. If we look at Sefer Dvarim and we look further in the story of the spies, the same story, we'll see that the reason that Bnei Yisrael want to send the spies and the reason that they approach Moshe is for a much more military purpose. They really want to send the spies lachpor et haaretz, to really do some digging and find out what are we getting ourselves into. And so with these two perspectives in mind, let's take a look at Sefer Bamidbar, take a step back on Sefer Bamidbar, and see what is really Sefer Bamidbar all about. Well, I'll tell you what I think. Sefer Bamidbar really is about, at least the first half of Sefer Bamidbar, is about Bnei Yisrael. Well, the whole Sefer is really about Bnei Yisrael and their travels in the desert, and really what went wrong. How did Bnei Yisrael sin, and why were they in the end left in the desert for 40 years? And this story, the story of the Meraglim, is exactly it's one of the stories that classifies Sefer Bamidbar for really what it is. Bnei Yisrael's travels in the desert and what really went wrong. And at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, we're kind of meeting Bnei Yisrael at a time where they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. They're kind of on the brink of going into Eretz Yisrael. And they're going with this, they've almost reached this level where they're ready spiritually to enter the land. And now Hashem feels, and if we look at the mitzvot, in fact, at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, you'll see this kind of reflected. And as Hashem sees that they're kind of on this level and they're ready almost to go into Eretz Yisrael, it's time to send out these spies to perform this important mitzvah of surveying the land and dividing out the land. Not really as spies per se, but really just as people who are really as the Nisi'im who have this mitzvah of going into the land and dividing up the land for Bnei Yisrael. What happened? Bnei Yisrael, whatever happened, they didn't listen to Hashem. They went against Hashem. And as we know, the end of the story is very sad. They had to stay in the desert for another 40 years. In Sefer Dvarim, we're looking at Bnei Yisrael at a very different time and in a very different place. 40 years have already passed, and now they too are on the brink of going into Eretz Yisrael, but in a very different way. They are going into Eretz Yisrael now in a very military way. We are now going to go in and conquer the land. That's really the thrust and the most important, and many of the most important parts of Sefer Dvarim talk about how they should prepare for war and what they should be doing in order to prepare for their imminent entrance into the land. Yes. Not so much. It doesn't seem at least that the focus of Sefer Bamidbar is military at all. The focus of Sefer Bamidbar is talking about their travels in the desert, kind of as a preparation to enter Eretz Yisrael, but then because things go wrong, the perspective changes to how did Bnei Yisrael sin and what did they do that was kind of against Hashem. And what was really going on in Sefer Bamidbar is that we're supposed to look at the story of the Meraglim as, well, Hashem wanted them to go in to look at the land for a godly purpose, as a mitzvah, to go and divide the land, and they went astray, and they went wrong, and now we have to stay in the desert for longer. They were about to enter the land, but the reason they're going into the land, the reason that the spies are going into the land in Sefer Bamidbar is not for a military purpose at all. No. In Sefer Dvarim, though, Moshe is telling them that, yes, long ago we sent these spies, and you also asked me to send these spies in order to look at the land, in order to search the land for a military purpose, says Moshe. And now that you are going into the land, I want you to look at the story of the spies and understand what went wrong for you in a military way. You're about to enter the land. Now, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with this story of the spies? Well, if you want to send your own spies, don't do what we did 40 years ago. Don't do what we did with this story of the spies. Don't send the spies in this exact way. And that's why Sefer Dvarim takes on a much more military message. Moshe is telling Bnei Yisrael, don't do the same thing as we did for tactical reasons. Don't do the same thing in a military way. And if we go to Sefer Yehoshua, you'll see that he does indeed send spies for military purposes, and he does it in a very, very different way, which we won't talk about right now. Question?
Aren't there, it's crippled from what you're saying. Mm-hmm. In Bamidbar, he's talking to one generation of Jews,
mm-hmm.
and in Zion, he's talking to a completely different audience. Moshe's still alive,
right?
But none of these kids' parents.
No, no.
He's talking to the younger generation.
Yes, yes.
So that's also a way, one way you're talking to people who were slaves.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true,
that's
too.
Another point here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I remember learning was that until Israel, Bnei Israel sinned, Hashem was willing to let them come in without conquering.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were going to come in and everybody else was just going to flee and they were going to just have this land all for themselves.
Right, well, certainly from at least the pshat of Sefer Bamidbar, if we're looking at the beginning of the Sefer, as you say, from the perspective of Bnei Yisrael being on the brink of entering Eretz Yisrael, there doesn't seem to be any military suggestion or any military mitzvot even that are given to Bnei Yisrael, so that would fit in very nicely with that. Thank you. Okay, so So that's our first genre of double stories, a double story that's told across two Svarim. And the way that we really have to look at these double stories, I think, is to take a step back, look at the Sefer that it comes from, and understand kind of the motivation of that Sefer. What is the theme of the Sefer that the story comes from? Then we can understand the perspective that each of the Svarim are giving in order to look at the same exact event in history. Okay, we'll leave that one for now, because it kind of is a much longer discussion, but that's the first example. The second example we're going to talk about is, as you see, it's entitled The Same Event, But a New Message. Same event, different message. Okay, and this type of story is a story that's repeated in the Tanakh, but it's repeated in the exact same place. So we have a story, and then maybe a few psukim later, or maybe half a parak later, the same story is repeated again. And in our case, actually, we have a story that's almost retold three times within half a parak. And this, of course, I'm talking about the story of Kriyat Yamsuf. The story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf, is actually repeated and retold three times within half a parak, really. So we're going to read through this story together, and we'll see why that is, how we reconcile this genre of repetitive story. So we'll start from Pasuk Tetvav, Vayomer, and source 2, if everyone has it. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Matzi Tzakalai, Deberal Bnei Yisrael Vayisau. So Bnei Yisrael are very angry. They see they've come up to Yam Suf. They can't cross over Yam Suf. And they're complaining to Moshe, what are we going to do? Hashem's never going to save us. And Hashem says, why are you yelling to Moshe? Why are you yelling at me? Tell Bnei Yisrael to move on. And what are we going to do? Pasuk Tetzayin. Vahata haremet matcha unete et yatcha al hayam uvka ehu vayavo bnei Yisrael b'toch hayam v'yabasha. And you are going to perform kriyat yamsuf, raise your stick, and the waters of the Red Sea are going to part. Yodzayin v'ani hinini v'chazek et lev Mitzrayim vayavo u'achareihem v'yichbada b'paro v'koch chela b'richba u'b'parashav v'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem v'yichbadati b'paro b'richba u'b'parashav. So what does Hashem say? He says, and Paro is going to follow after Bnei Yisrael, and in this way, through this Kriyat Yamsuf, Paro and Mitzrayim are going to know that I am God. So what seems to be the main goal, according to Hashem, of Kriyat Yamsuf, according to this first telling of what's about to happen? That Paro and Mitzrayim are going to know that Hashem is God. Ah, beautiful. It has been demonstrated for the whole of, at least from Vayera and Bo, for sure. But it seems that even after Makah B'chorot, Paro follows Moshe and Paro follows Moshe and Bnei Yisrael all the way to Yam Suf. So obviously they still haven't really gotten the message. For sure some of the Mitzrim have, but it's obvious then not all of them have, for sure. Why they haven't, that's a different discussion. But they haven't. So, but through this, says Hashem, they will for sure know that I am God. And that seems to be the main drive of Kriyat Yamsuf. And so, if we skip to Pasuk Kaf Aleph, we'll see what actually happened. Vayet Moshe Yadol Hayam, Vayolech Hashem et Hayam, Beruach Kadim Aza Kol Halayla, Vayasem et Hayam Lacherava, Vayibaku Hamayim. So there's this, Moshe raises his stick, and there's this mighty wind the whole night, and then eventually the water splits. Vayavo bnei Yisrael b'toch hayam v'yabasha v'hamayim lahem choma miminam u'mismalam, and bnei Yisrael walk through on dry land. Vayudafu Mitzrayim v'yavo acharehem kol sus paro richbo u'parasha v'l'toch hayam. Vayihi b'ashmor et habokir v'yashkef Hashem el machane Mitzrayim v'amud esh v'anan v'yaham im achane Mitzrayim. So Mitzrayim runs through Yam Suf after Bnei Yisrael, and then Hashem mixes up and causes chaos within the camp of Mitzrayim. Vayasar et ofen markavotav vayahangehu bichvedu, and he takes off the wheels of their markavot, and it's very hard for them to, as you can imagine, go through the Yam Suf. Vayomer Mitzrayim anusa mipnei Yisrael ki Hashem nilcham lahem Mitzrayim. And what indeed happens? Mitzrayim look and they see that Hashem is fighting for Bnei Yisrael, and really that the message is received. Mitzrayim knows that Hashem is God. Excellent. That's what Hashem said is going to happen is exactly what happens. And now we have almost a third retelling of the story, if everybody could turn their pages to Pasuk Kaftet. We have another repetition of the story, kind of seemingly out of place. Ubnei Yisrael halchu bayabasha betoch hayam, v'hamayim lahem choma miminam u'mismalam. So almost the exact same pasuk that we read in Pasuk Kaftet beforehand, in the account in our previous accounts of the of Kriyat Yam Suf, we have once again. Bnei Yisrael halchu bayabasha betoch hayam, v'hamayim lahem choma miminam u'mismalam. And then what happens? Pasuk Lamed, Vayosha Hashem Vayom Hahu et Yisrael miyad Mitzrayim, Vayar Yisrael Mitzrayim met al Sfat Hayam, Vayar Yisrael et Hayad Hagdola Asher Asa Hashem Mitzrayim, Vayiru Ha'am et Hashem, Vayaminu B'Hashem u'B'Moshe Avda. And then we talk about how Bnei Yisrael now believe in Hashem, basically. Okay, so we have one account of Hashem saying, this is what's going to happen and this is why I want it to happen, so Mitzrayim believe. And then a second account of the same Kriyat Yam Suf, where Mitzrayim actually do believe in Hashem. And then a third retelling of the Kriyat Yam Suf, but this time for a different reason. It seems in the end that there was an additional effect of Kriyat Yam Suf to our first initial one, which was that the Mitzrayim should believe in Hashem. We also have in our third repetition of Kriyat Yam Suf, we have an additional message, which is very obvious to everyone, I'm sure, which is that now Bnei Yisrael also believe in Hashem. Now Bnei Yisrael see the great miracles of Hashem, and they also believe. Yeah.
Why the difference here, though, for Yabasha B'toch Hayam? In the first two telling us Bayam B'Yabasha, and here it's Bayabasha Bayam. Is there any?
Where is this? Bayabasha B'toch Hayam, and Bayabo Bnei Yisrael B'toch Hayam Bayabasha. That's very interesting. It could be, it's very interesting. It could be that the first B'toch Hayam B'Yabasha is more emphasizing the, almost the Yabasha part. Like, in the B'toch Hayam B'Yabasha, but again, in this time we're talking about the Mitzri perspective. So they see Bnei Yisrael as walking through on dry land versus they who are only walking through, who are walking through, but it's very hard for them. Whereas in the second case, for them, it's amazing that they're walking through the sea. The Yabasha for them is not as important as the walking through the sea. So it could just be a different perspective. One is the Mitzri perspective of seeing Bnei Yisrael on the Yabasha. Second is Bnei Yisrael seeing themselves in the sea. Maybe that's an excellent point. That's a slight change. Okay, so we see here a very simple example of another repetitive story, but of a different type, right? This type of repetitive story is once again the same historical event, but this time it's being told from two separate perspectives. It's obvious that the pshat speaks for itself and explains why the story is told twice. It's told twice because we have to understand two separate messages. One, that Mitzrayim believed that Hashem was God, and two, that Bnei Yisrael believed that Hashem is God. And that's the reason for this repetition in this case. And there are other examples of this type of repetition as well. And the idea is to look at this repetition from two different perspectives. It's usually very obvious, and the pshat makes it obvious for us. But that's this genre of repetition, where a story is repeated within itself, within the same parak, within the same time period. And really, it's just coming across as two separate messages. That's genre number two. So the first two genres that we spoke about of repetitive stories were stories where the same event is happening, the same historical event is being repeated. We're now going to look at two different genres of repetitive stories where it's not the same historical event that's being repeated, but it is in essence the same story just happening to different people. And we'll try to understand how the Tanakh uses this genre of repetition and why that is. Okay, so the third type of repetitive story is where we have the same story, but it's a new character. And we'll try to understand what the Tanakh does with that. So we have our first example here, and we in Bereshit Perek Kafav, where we're meeting Yitzchak Avinu. Okay, it's another very famous story. Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, everybody sees it, it's source 3. Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, Milvad Harav HaRishon Asher Haya Bimei Avraham, Vayelach Yitzchak El Avimelech Melech Plishtim Grara. So there's a famine in the land separate, a different famine from the land that was during the times of Abraham. And Yitzchak goes down to Avimelech Melech Plishtim in Gerar. And now if we skip to Pasuk Vav, Vayashav Yitzchak beGerar, Vayish'alu Anshei HaMakom LeIshto, Vayomer Achotihi, Ki Yareh Lemor Ishti, Pen Yahargunei Anshei HaMakom Arifka, Ki Tovat Mar'ehi. And Yitzchak says, she's my sister, because he's nervous that the people of the place are going to kill him in order to get to his wife, because she's so beautiful. I'm sure everybody can imagine, or some people at least, know that this story is almost exactly the same story as happened to Abraham, Yitzchak's father. If everyone turns the page, we'll read those psukim really quickly. Vayisa misham Abraham arza haneged, vayeshev ben kadesh uben shur, vayagar bigrar. So Abraham also goes down to Gerar. Vayomer Abraham el Sarah ishto, achotihi, vayishlach avimelech melech Gerar, vayikach et Sarah. So also Abraham says that his wife is his sister, and in fact Abimelech takes Sarah for himself. And really, it's the same story, right? We have two people going to Gerar, going to Melech Plishtim, two people calling their wives sisters, their sisters. And in fact, if we look and progress in the story, we see that Abraham then goes and digs up wells and forms a treaty with Abimelech. And also in the Yitzchak story, Yitzchak also goes and digs wells. And it's not just any wells that Yitzchak digs, but it's actually the exact same wells that Abraham had already dug up when he was in Gerar so many years before. And if we just go back to our first source that we saw over there in source 3, we see that there's this little interlude about how Hashem tells, after it says that Yitzchak already went down to Gerar, Hashem says to Yitzchak, oh, by the way, don't go down to Mitzrayim. I don't want you to go down to Mitzrayim. And you're thinking, well, why would Yitzchak even think of going to Mitzrayim? He already went to Gerar. And Rashi says, well, because in the first famine during the times of Abraham, all the way back in Bereishit Perek Yud Gimel, what does Abraham do as soon as there's a famine? The first thing Abraham does is go down to Mitzrayim. So Yitzchak also is thinking to himself, well, there's a famine. Maybe I should go to Mitzrayim. And Hashem has to tell him, no, don't do exactly what your father did. Don't go down to Mitzrayim. But do another thing that is exactly like what your father did. Go to Gerar, go to Avimelech. And then the same story continues and follows. Okay, so that's one example of a same story that happens to two separate people. Before we take a look at that, let's look at one other example of the same story, two different characters. Okay, and this one is in Yehoshua Perek Hey. And I'll start reading from Pasuk Yud Gemel. Vayhi biyot Yehoshua biyericho, vayisa einav, vayar, והנה איש עומד לנגדו וחרבו שלופה בידו. וילך יהושע אליו ויאמר לו, הלנו אתה אם לצרינו. So Yehoshua is in Yericho and he sees this man whose sword is drawn and he says, are you for us or are you against us? ויאמר לו, כי אני שר צבא השם, אתה באתי. ויפול יהושע על פניו ארצה וישתחוו ויאמר לו, מה אדוני מדבר על עבדו? So the person says, no, I'm not against you. I'm a tsar tzva Hashem. I'm a leader of the legions of Hashem. And Yehoshua falls on his face. Vayomer tsar tzva Hashem el Yehoshua, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, ki anakom asher atah omed alev, kodeshu, vayas Yehoshua ken. And the tsar tzva says to Yehoshua, take off your shoes because the land that you're standing on is holy. And Yehoshua does exactly that. And this story, this last pasuk, especially with this encounter of a man of God, is really a repetition of the exact same pasuk that we saw in Shmot so many years before, happening to Moshe with his first encounter, really, with God in the Sneh Bo'er Ba'esh. And without reading the whole introduction to the Sneh, we'll just read that pasuk in Pasuk He, Shmot Perek Gimel, Vayomer. Al tikrav halon, don't come close, says the malach in the Sneh Bo'er. Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, ki ha'makom asher atah omed alev, admat kodeshu. The exact, almost word for word, the exact same pasuk, take off your shoes, the land that you're standing on is holy. Many of the events in Yehoshua's life are really repetitions of the events that happened to Moshe. Yehoshua also has his own Kriyat Yamsuf in the form of the Yarden splitting to one side. As we mentioned before, Yehoshua also sends out his own set of spies to spy out the land of Eretz Yisrael. And here, as we see, also an encounter with God with the same pasuk being repeated, to take off your shoes. And if you look at Sefer Yehoshua, you'll see that Moshe is mentioned so many times in Sefer Yehoshua, just like Moshe did, just like Moshe did. If you read through Yehoshua, you'll really get that feeling of Moshe's presence. And these two examples that I brought, of Yitzchak and of Yehoshua, are both really characters that are repeating the same history of somebody who came before them. And the reason for that, I think, is that for Yitzchak Avinu, he is given this task of following in the same footsteps of Abraham. He has to take what Abraham has already built. He has to take the messages of Abraham and just carry them on. He is the second of. He has to carry on the legacy of his father Abraham. And what the Torah is telling us is, the Torah tells us this through the repetitive stories, that Yitzchak's life has to be almost a repetition of what Abraham already did, to follow that legacy, to keep that legacy strong.
So where does that principle apply with
Yaakov Avinu had a kind of a different, it's a good question, and he also has some of the similarities, but Yaakov Avinu had a different task because he was the father of Bnei Yisrael, and he was, right, he's forming the nation. So Yitzchak is kind of carrying on the messages of Abraham in terms of a family name almost, or in terms of the family messages. And now that Yitzchak did that successfully, it's Yaakov's turn to now build the nation. So he has a new task of continuing on the family and on kind of a larger scale. So he's different. Yitzchak, though, really is in many, many ways the same as Abraham. Yitzchak also has two sons. Just like Abraham had two sons, Yishmael and Yitzchak, Yitzchak has Yaakov and Esav. Esav is rejected, kind of. And we continue Bnei Yisrael on with Yaakov in the same way that Yishmael was in the same way rejected, and we continue on Bnei Yisrael with Yitzchak. So we know that Abraham did have more children, but the ones that we concentrate on in the Torah are Yishmael and Yitzchak, kind of as rivals of each other, in the same way that Yaakov and Esav come out as rivals of each other. Yehoshua, in the same way, is also trying to carry on in the same footsteps as Moshe. But really, in a deeper way for Yehoshua, he has this almost daunting task of being the leader that comes after Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a very, very hard thing to live up to Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think for Yehoshua, in terms of these double stories, Yehoshua sees himself as also carrying on the legacy of Moshe Rabbeinu in the same way as Moshe. But the double stories also give Yehoshua this sense of security and this sense of strength, that now he can continue and he can be a great leader. He can live up to Moshe because the same things are happening to him, right? I'm also capable of doing my own Kriyat Yamsuf. I'm also capable of sending out my spies. I also have this encounter with Hashem. And it's also not just for Yehoshua, but for Bnei Yisrael as well. Bnei Yisrael look at Yehoshua and they're like, well, who is this guy? I mean, we're used to Moshe, right? But now that they see that these similar things are happening, things that are familiar to them, things that they recognize from the times of Moshe, they too now could believe in Yehoshua in the same way, or maybe even better, that in the way that they followed Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshe as a leader. So Yehoshua and Yitzchak in that way are characters that are, the Tanakh uses this repetition to show us that now they are carrying on in the same name and in the same, very similar ways as their predecessors, as somebody before them. And that's the use of this type of double story, this genre, this same story, but now we have a new character really just doing the same thing. Question?
I think in addition to strengthening Yehoshua, mm-hmm. and strengthening the people's view of Yehoshua, I think it also is a message to the reader, because these two events are both private events that happen only to Moshe, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or did Bnei Israel. So I think it's one step beyond. Also, what you're in addition, the mm-hmm. issue of to the reader, that they make that connection, that these two people are a continuation of each other. So mm-hmm. to them and to the people of the time. But to us.
Also, as the readers. Excellent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
first there's a malach, but then God is actually the one speaking to Moshe.
So mm-hmm.
It's a different level. And, you know, Moshe crosses the Yamsuf, right? The Yamsuf is supposed to be Yeshua. It's the Yari. Like, it's a different level, and that there's that message too, that the leader that follows Moshe has greatness, but it's derived from Moshe. You have that, you know, in the smicha, but also, you know, it's not the same level, and that needs to be understood also as you sort of look at history.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. That's very true, very possible also. And it's interesting you mentioned the sun and the moon, because Chazal really shy away from trying to relate Yehoshua to the sun in any way, because the sun is really ascribed to Moshe. Rabbeinu Moshe was the sun and Yehoshua was the moon, and there's a lot of interesting things about that, especially in the way that the Tanakh deals with when Yehoshua really is almost likened to the sun in our Shemesh B'Givan Dom story later on in Yehoshua and Yod, one of the Yods, Yod Bet or something like that. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's an interesting point. Very nice. Yeah. Are interesting, right, exactly. To see the differences, to see the way that the stories do change. Right, exactly. Beautiful. Okay, so that's our third genre, the genre of a different event, but really it's essentially the same story and what we can learn through the differences, as Raquel pointed out, or also through the similarities between the two stories. The last type of repetitive story that we're going to talk about is my favorite kind of repetitive story, and that is a different event, but really it's the same story. So it's a different historical event told in a very different time period, but it's essentially the same story. And one of the best examples that I can think of this is the famous story of the Pilegesh Bagivah. And the Pilegesh Bagivah story is, I'll just tell you briefly about it. Basically, it's set during the times of Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim is set in a time that was very, very rocky for Bnei Yisrael. We know that Sefer Shoftim, Bnei Yisrael are going through these nations coming to attack them, and then these Shoftim come and save them, and it's very back and forth. Bnei Yisrael sin, the nations come and attack, and the Shofet comes and saves, and on and on and on, until the very end of Sefer Shoftim, where we encounter these three or four stories that really outline to us how terrible it was in Bnei Yisrael, how terrible the times really, really were. And this story of Pilegesh Bagivah is an example of that, of the atrocities that went on during the times of Sefer Shoftim within Bnei Yisrael. And basically the story is that there was this man, and he had this Pilegesh, he had this concubine, and she ran away to her father's house. And he runs after her and chases her to her father's house to get her. And he's taking her back home, and they're on their way back home. And they stop in this city of Yavus, which we know eventually becomes Yerushalayim. And they stop in this city, and he says, you know, this isn't a Jewish city. I don't feel so comfortable here. Why don't we move on and go to Givat Binyamin, which is close by, and we'll stop in Givat Binyamin for the night. So we're meeting the Pilegesh and the concubine and her husband and this man, and they're in Givat Binyamin. And they're wandering around, and it's nighttime, night is falling, and nobody's really there. And then they encounter this older man in Givat Binyamin. So why don't we read these few psukim together in source 4. Pasuk tetzayin, v'hina ish zaken ba min ma'asehu min hasadeh ba'erev, v'ha ish mehar Ephraim, v'hu gar ba'givah, v'anshei hamakom b'nei yimini. So we have this elderly man, and he's coming back from his work in the field. Vayisa ina vayard ha'ish ha'areach b'rchov ha'ir, vayomer ha'ish hazaken, ana talech u'me'ayin tava. So he lifts up his eyes and he sees these two people. He sees the man and his concubine, and he asks them where you're going. Vayomer alav ovrim anachnu mi'beit lechem Yehuda ad yarkitei ha'Ephraim misham anachi va'elech ad beit lechem Yehuda ve'al beit Hashem ani holech ve'ein ish ma'asefot yabaita. So he gives this whole long-winded answer. This is where I'm from and this is where I'm going. Fine. Vigam teven gam ispa yesh lacham arenu, vigam lechem beyayin yesh li, vela amatecha, vela nar, ima vadecha, ein machzor kol davar. Do you guys have this part?
Yeah.
Sorry, I realized that I wasn't sure. Okay, and he says, but don't worry about me, I have everything, you don't need to give me anything, says the man with the pilegesh, don't worry about taking too much care of me. Okay, pasukaf. Vayomer ha'ish hazaken, shalom lach, rak kol masracha alai, rak baruchov al talen. He says, please come in, stay with me. Just don't stay in the city. Don't sleep on the street. Vayavi'ehu leveta, vayaval lachamorim, vayachutsu raglehem, vayachlu vayishtu. And he gives them everything they want. Hema metivim et libam, vihine anshe ha'ir, anshe pnei blial, nasabu et habayit, mitafkim al hadelet. Vayomru al ha'ish bal habayit hazaken lemor, hotse et ha'ish asher ba'al beitecha v'nadenu. So suddenly the people of the city of Givat Binyamin, who are apparently very evil people, surround the house and they say, send out this man who you, the old man, have taken in as a guest to your house. And the old man says, please don't do this thing, please don't take my guest outside of the house. Hine biti habitula upilag shehu, otziana otam, the anu otam, vayasulahem hatovainechem, velaish haze lota su davar hanevala haza. And he says, listen, I have this virgin daughter, and he has this concubine, why don't we just send them out? You can have them instead of this man, instead of this guest. Velo avu haanashim lishmoala, and they didn't listen to him, vayachazek haish befilag shah, vayotzealem hachutz. They didn't listen to the old man, and the man, the husband, grabs onto his concubine, throws her out of the house. And the Pilegesh is sent out of the house, and the people of the city rape her all the way until the morning. Not going to read the rest, but it ends up as a terrible story. The next day, they open the door, and they see the Pilegesh fallen on the doorstep. It's not even clear if she's dead or if she's still a little bit alive. The husband takes his concubine, cuts her into 12 different pieces, and sends her body parts to all of the different Shivtei Yisrael to show what an atrocity has happened in Yisrael and how low Bnei Yisrael have fallen at that time in Givat Binyamin. So it's a horrible story, but I think many of you have already picked it up or know that this story is the exact parallel of Sdom and Amorah, the story that we have of Lot and the two Melachim who come to visit him. In both stories, we have two people coming to a foreign place in the evening. Two people are taken in by one man, in one case Lot, in one case the Ish HaZaken. In both cases, the people of the city surround the house and try to get the person who's the Oreach, the person who's the host, to send out their guest. In both cases, the Oreach, the host, offers two women. In one case, it's Lot offering his two daughters, and in the other case, it's the Ish HaZaken offering the Pilegesh and his own daughter. And the way the stories end, the only difference really between the stories is in the way that they end. In the story of Sdom, the Melachim managed to pull Lot back inside of the house, saving both him and his daughters. Whereas in the story of the Ish HaZaken does not pull the man back inside the house. Instead, the man pulls his own wife, his Pilegesh, the concubine, and throws her outside the house. And the story ends in this very tragic way. So it's the same story, but it's just told during a different time period. And I think that the way the Tanakh uses this type of story, a lot of these stories are really used as repetitions from Sifrei Nevi'im, two famous stories that happen in Sefer Torah, in Sifrei Torah, in the Torah. There are many famous stories that are famous that everybody knows, and in Sefer Nevi'im there are many hints, or in this case, an entire story that really is parallel and repeats the same story in the Torah. In our specific case of Pilegesh Bagivah, it really is a comment on society. It's not just that Bnei Yisrael were bad at that time, and, oh, we read these stories and it's so tragic and so sad. They were so bad that they were just as bad as the people, the most evil people that we could possibly think of from the Torah, people who deserve to be completely destroyed and eradicated, the people of Sdom and Amorah. That's how bad Bnei Yisrael were. And they weren't even They were bad, and possibly they were even worse. The story ends in an even more negative way than the story of Sodom and Gomorrah did, at least on that individual house level. I mean, obviously, Sodom and Gomorrah were totally eradicated. We have a little bit of a different ending here for the story of Givat Binyamin. But nonetheless, what the Tanakh is telling us is that the Tanakh could have told us a story and could have told us about how terrible Bnei Yisrael were without really making these, as in fact there are many textual parallel links, without really making these links. But instead the Tanakh and the writer of Sefer Shoftim chooses to write the story in the same way as Sodom and Gomorrah in order to really make this link and in order to make us understand how far Bnei Israel have sunk to a level of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's really, really bad news. And so this form of repetition in the Tanakh is really used, it's really a commentary on the second story. It makes us understand the second story on a much deeper and a much clearer level. And so today, we spoke about four different types of repetitive stories, two types of repetitive stories that are just the same exact story repeated, and two types of repetitive story, the same exact historical event that's repeated, and two types of repetitive stories where it's not the same historical event, but it's essentially the same exact story. And this tool of repetition is used in many different ways in the Tanakh. Really, I think in these, we can even divide it into these four broad categories, and I'm sure you can think of your own examples and of examples yourself. But I think this tool of repetition is important for us to understand that the Tanakh is doing this purposely. The Tanakh does this so that it can sharpen the messages and make us understand the lessons in the Tanakh that much better and in that much more clearer way. Thank you very much for coming today. And if you have questions, let me know.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.